You are listening to The Kevin Smith Show, the number one talk show choice of many galaxies.
Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to The Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this gorgeous planet we call Earth. Thank you for being here at The Kevin Smith Show. Some of you are joining us for the very first time, and allow me to welcome you aboard. We're glad you're here, and I hope you make a habit out of it. It's a good habit to get into. Lots of folks around this beautiful planet have that habit. We have a new poll on the website. Now, the other poll was up there for a long time. The question was whether or not you think it's true that there is a nebula made of beer. You know, if you had gods in the garden and if you had watched it, you would have seen a picture of it. Yes, Virginia, there is a nebula made of beer. Actually, it's methyl alcohol, which is the alcohol that's in beer, and it's in our galaxy. It's about a little over 400 million miles across. Big, big place, lots and lots of beer. But there's a new poll, and if you haven't voted, be sure you do that, okay? I was not with you last night live. We did a rebroadcast or an encore presentation. That is because of the fact that with the rather drastic weather changes that we had here yesterday and last evening, I was just way too congested to be able to do 2 hours at the microphone. And I took some medicine for it, which is very rare. I don't normally take medicine, but I did take some. Nevertheless, I'm back tonight and glad to be here. And I hope you enjoyed the encore presentation that we presented last night. There is a pretty interesting story from Spain. I like Spain. I was in Spain back in 1980. And I was in Madrid, I was in Malaga, I was in Barcelona, Toledo, where else? Rota. But anyway, this is from Barcelona. The European Space Agency has taken a big step forward in this whole idea of putting humans in a colony long term on the moon or on Mars. And, you know, one of the big problems that such an outpost would have would be food, water, and oxygen. And so what they've done is they have inaugurated a second generation Melissa. Okay, now you may not be familiar with this. They've already done the first generation. It was successful. The second generation of Melissa is even more advanced, more capable, and it stands for Micro Ecological Life Support System Alternative. That's what Melissa stands for. And this is at the university, let's see, where is it? It's a university in Barcelona, and I had it marked but don't see it now. But anyway, the... what this thing does, it has three basic compartments, and what it does is it processes wastewater, waste matter, and carbon dioxide for reuse, for food, water, and oxygen. Big step forward in space exploration. I hope it is successful. We'll be back with Sam Maranto right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening has been with us before, and we're delighted to have him with us again. His name is Sam Maranto, and he is the president of Illinois MUFON. And you should go and visit that site. You'll find lots of great stuff, illinoismufon.com. And I was privileged to visit that site today. And Sam, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you very much, Kevin. Look forward to being on here.
You know, in addition to being on talk shows like this one, you also have appeared on some television shows as well, I believe. And people have also seen you on YouTube, and they've seen you speak at conferences. So you stay pretty busy. Are you with Illinois MUFON? Do you do this pretty much full time now?
It's a full time job between investigations and handling the organization. I have my own business. That is not you know, where I dedicate most of my time these days. It's to research and building up this organization and getting the word out. And in this economy, you know, it does hurt. But we need the truth out.
Yeah, and, you know, it is a fact that already, I mean, anybody involved in trying to get UFO information, the real stuff, trying to get it out to the public, was already hurting financially. I don't know anybody that that can make a living out of it. Well, you can eke a living, but I don't know anybody that really does well financially doing things related to UFOs. However, in this economic downturn, an already fairly tight situation has turned dire for many, and not just in the UFO field, but for everyone. But it has hit the UFO field rather severely as well. Sam, I think the last time we talked, the hot meal on the plate was the Chicago O'Hare sighting, and I mean there were other things we talked about, but that was very much in the news at that time. And people were still buzzing about it. It was still being talked about a lot. But I think it's important for people to know that your part of the United States is somewhat of a hotspot for UFO activity. And there have been a lot of significant sightings since the Chicago O'Hare sighting.
Yes. UFO activity in our region is quite common. We get cases nearly every day, and of course we get our cases from the MUFON CMS file. Of course, Peter Davenport sends cases now and then. Then we get cases he called in. Of course, you know, I'm a consultant for UFO hunters, so I get cases sent to me from there to take a peek at. And people that just know me or hear my name. We get calls nearly every day as far as pertaining to cases. So we get, I would say right now, Julie and I were talking about how many cases we're actually behind on, and I would say a good 40. So we get cases all the time. What I like more so than anything else are cases with multiple witnesses. As you know, I prefer mass sightings, like, of course, the Tinley Park case, which was a mass sighting case, which most people have heard about. The O'Hare case, which I consider a mass sighting case, Rockford, which was a mass sighting case, and even the Millstatt, DuPont, and Highland of 2000, the sighting in southern Illinois, there were multiple groups of people, and that could possibly even be considered as a mass sighting case. So we get those quite a bit. Right now, the cases we're getting are more centralized in the Freeport, Rockford, Dixon area, and then we're getting some cases from Minnesota.
All right, now why would you be getting cases from Minnesota? Do they not have MUFON up there?
Yes, these are cases that are not through MUFON.
Okay.
In other words, these are cases given to me to take a peek at. And if they're cases that warrant, say, for instance, if there was a... let's say there was physical evidence or photographic evidence, I would, of course, call somebody up there to take to recover that and take a peek at it and forward that in, or get a copy of it, take a peek at too. But more so, these were for seeing if there any value for a show, put it that way.
Okay.
If they warrant becoming a part of a show or to use, for instance, how, in other words, you consider a concept. Are they sightings that could be used for a concept for a show or something like that?
All right. Now, you mentioned physical evidence. Is that a normal thing, a usual thing, that there will be physical evidence to collect?
No. Physical evidence, of course, the rarest thing, trace evidence, and we have one physical trace evidence case that still has to be qualified to even warrant further investigations. And that was from St. Patrick's Day of this last year. A gentleman seen an object earlier in the day, reported to his son. He's seen this object come down low over a car. Apparently he had some what appeared to have been burns or first-degree burns on his face. And was admitted into the hospital. We don't know all the details yet. It's still under investigation, and we have a sampling that we've just collected, and if it warrants it, it's going to be evaluated. We have to get the medical records. There may be more involved to this than initially explained. Let's put it that way.
Okay, now you said you would have to get a sampling. What would you be getting a sampling of? What sort of physical?
Sample.
I'm sorry?
We have a hair sample, and we have the authorization to retrieve medical records.
I see. All right, now when did this one happen?
That was on March 17th.
So not that long ago, just a few weeks ago.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, now in that one, did he describe the object? Was it an oval shape, a triangle shape? What was the shape of this object?
Described it like a shoe. It reminded him of a shoe. And that object, his description when he said a shoe, actually sent shivers through my spine, because that is one perspective of a type of craft that has been seen and photographed. We have photographs of this object that was seen in Oak Lawn in October of this year, and I'm relatively certain that it is exactly the same object that came out of the triangular craft that was seen in Empire, Ohio on, I believe, October the 25th. So that's sort of interesting. And there was another gentleman who confirmed that such an object does or was seen coming out of a massive triangular craft on August the 22nd, 2004, at Rib Mountain in Wausau, Wisconsin, the day after our mass sighting in Tinley Park, Illinois. This gentleman said it came out of the craft. He described it to a T. He also described a unique aspect to this thing that I really can't talk about, because I hope to find more people explaining the same thing, and I don't want to taint the, how that goes with evidence and witness testimony. So there is something very unique to it, a very unique characteristic, in addition to a visual. This gentleman was real close to this massive triangle, who he said was larger or as large as the mountain itself that he was on, and he was standing on one of these fire towers directly below it. And he watched the skin of the craft, as he said, it undulated, and it was very unusual looking. This object came out. It moved very rapidly over an automobile. The automobile stopped dead in its tracks. The lights went off. It hovered over it for approximately a minute or so. Then it shot off over the horizon, came back, and went into the ship. The large triangular craft, while it was over him, he said he felt some sensations throughout his body also. The quartz in his watch was destroyed. The telephone, which I hoped to recover from him for physical trace evidence, was also destroyed. He had magnetic properties to gold, his ring and a few other things, which would not be commonplace. And then he also had an unusual effect when he came home, where he grabbed the handle of the microwave, which was plastic, and a spark emitted from his finger, or vice versa, and burnt a hole in his finger. So he had a lot of different things happen to him, but he says the object that was here in Tinley Park, he knows that to be the very same thing that was there in August 22nd. He says when he's seen the UFO Hunters episode, Illinois Invasion, or Invasion Illinois, that was exactly the same thing that he had over him on the 22nd, the very next night.
You have had a spate of sightings of triangular UFOs, and you've mentioned in this account the very large triangle. And you've had a spate of those this year, haven't you?
Yes, we have.
What's the deal with that?
The one that we've had is, we actually had a couple variations. We had a thick V-shaped craft, Dixon, Illinois, and that was in April. And this thick craft, first of all, the gentleman was in his home, and he was going to take his two dogs out for a walk. All of a sudden, the entire house started shaking, and it was a deep guttural shaking. He says the sound that was resonating, he was able to hear it, sounded much like a combination of thunder and a jet combined, but ridiculously loud. The paintings on the wall, et cetera, were almost ready to fall off, and he was really frightened by it. So the dogs were jumping, acting really crazy. He let them outside, and the dogs were jumping into the air, jumping and barking into the air. He looked up into the sky, and he saw two lights at a pretty big span between the two of them. He says either, you know, mile and a half, 2 miles apart. And he's looking at these things, and it looked like two can lights, ceiling can lights, mm-hmm. recessed, and the light was shining down. And as he looked up, he was able to discern that this thing was one solid V-shaped object. And it was thick. He said it had, there were angles to it, octagonal almost, like a stop sign, if you were to look at that from the angular side, but you know, project that out as being a plane on each angle. And those were the attributes to the front and all around it. And it curved back in the back, much like he describes as a banana on each side, rounding off at the tips. This object, he says, was massive, and it moved, and he says there were very small lights. You were able to distinguish little specks of smaller lights in it, and it was below the cloud cover. And he watched it move off at a pace, and again it made that very unusual sound. And he says there is absolutely nothing that he could possibly even make a correlation with. It was so truly unusual and unworldly. And he said that the thing that really got him was the thickness of it. It was so thick, like a tall building thick, many stories. As it was taking off, he was able to discern that this thing was very thick and terribly un-aerodynamic.
All right, now, is he the only one that has reported anything like that from that night?
No. Strangely enough, there was a report in Arizona, I believe, that same night of an unusual object being photographed and observed. His girlfriend was there, too, came out and observed the object, and both of them were just rolled over by this unusual event. Now, that object took off heading towards the Freeport area, Freeport, Rockford. And prior to that, and actually even that very week, we had sightings from that area again from multiple witnesses. And we also have photographs, and we also have footage.
Of the V-shape.
This is something different. This is actually, if you were to take like a pumpkin seed and were to bite off the end of it and have it concaved, there have been photographs of this type of UFO before and has been seen, from the 50s and even prior to that. And this is what a gentleman's seen, but it was quite large. It was big. It was a good, well, from the way he was describing it, probably about a mile away, and was easily 18 to 20 inches in length, if you were to put your arms up. So that's a very large object to be that far away. And then he also noticed the other object, which was relatively similar to the one that we were talking about that is associated with the large triangular crafts. And he has seen triangular crafts in and about the area, in addition to these other two unusual type of craft.
Back in the 90s, by what I'm about to say, I am not implying that no triangular craft had been seen prior. But in the 90s, it seemed like the appearance of these triangular craft was picking up in frequency, and it was causing UFO investigators to take notice that, you know, they were getting more reports of triangular craft, where before they were getting more reports of the circular or elliptical shaped craft. What do you think is the significance of that? I mean, why are we getting more triangles now, and we're getting more that are really odd shaped now? What's happening here?
Well, I have three opinions on this. One being, of course, some of it being our technology, which I'm certain it is. Number two, that we have been programmed. We are programmed, like it or not. In other words, when we think UFO, we think flying saucer, disc, or whatever. Therefore, if you see something other than, it has to be something else.
Hate to do it. We'll have to get the rest of that explanation after this break. But we will get it. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and my guest, Sam Maranto. He is the president of Illinois MUFON, M-U-F-O-N. And when we went away for break, you were explaining the various theories about why we're seeing so many different-shaped UFOs now instead of just the elliptical shapes that everyone was seeing back in the beginning of all of this.
Well, just to recap, of course, there's the likelihood, and we know for a fact many of the current new technologies and advanced, aviation, as far as in the world of aviation, the wedge-shaped or triangular crafts are the way to go. Obviously, there is also that possibly of super advanced and reverse engineered technologies. Now, beyond that, one thing that I was saying is the possibility of conditioning or programming. When we think of UFOs, we think of flying saucers, we think of discs. When you're looking for something, if it's something such a gargantuan thing, a behemoth in the sky taking up a mile or so, that just falls outside the realm of UFO. It's what the heck is it, you know? Or am I seeing things?
Mm-hmm.
I think many people just automatically discount it or are so frightened by it that they won't even take it into consideration. The other thing is it's so big they may only see or want to see a portion of it and just discount looking at the rest of it any further. So there's the conditioning factor. The other one is, are we being engaged by a group of species or whatever that have these vehicles in and about more so? I mean, we have accounts of triangular craft that go back some ways. The prior state director of Illinois MUFON International here in Illinois was a gentleman by the name of Dave Mahler, and his area of expertise was the triangular craft. Now, his accounts go back prior to 1935, and we know for a fact we had nothing flying in the order of what these things do and in that geometric composite and shape.
All right, I have a couple of questions about these triangular UFOs that have been reported to you fairly recently. And the first question is, what size craft are we talking about here?
Massive to objects within, maybe 300 feet in length. But the larger ones are the ones that intrigue me, those that are the large isosceles, the V-shape, the thick octagonal Vs, or those that look like carpenter's squares, or very unusual and massive type objects, things that just defy logic and what we know conventional aviation, you know, the rules of conventional aviation and manufacturing of such objects. These are too big, too large, too awkward to be flying in and about, and seen hovering, also moving about many times without any sound or little sound, hyper-leaping where they're there 1 minute, then all of a sudden they're somewhere else. The other thing is they seem to camouflage themselves or attempt to camouflage themselves quite well, also displaying patterns of stars beneath them, you know. So they're doing a good job trying to conceal themselves in many instances.
All right, now, through your investigations, this is the second question about the triangles. Through your investigations, have you come to any hypothesis or theory as to what is it that causes that rumbling and the ground shaking, as is reported in some cases, and you've told us about one? What causes that?
I have two theories. One being, of course, the result of some sort of mechanism inside, either for propulsion or whatever. The other being actually a downloading of information or a transfer of information. And this sounds really unusual, but on January 26, 2005, in and about the Glendale area of Arizona, I was involved in a case that was an ongoing case. A large cloud with a triangular object, it appears to be somewhat triangular, may very well be the very same object we're speaking of, appeared in and about a suburb and over a subdivision.
Mm-hmm.
There were multiple rumblings that appeared to be similar to this, and the result of which affected the phone lines. And there were 8 rumblings, but there were very unique patterns to that rumbling. And that may very well have not been noticed by the gentleman in Dixon, but may very well have taken place. In that episode in Arizona, the record, when the gentleman called me, there were patterns and of disturbances in the phone that were exactly the same patterns and lengths of the disturbance that was audible, that he actually heard and recorded. He had those sounds analyzed, and they were mechanical, not natural. Now, I had asked the gentleman in Dixon if there was any sort of disturbance, and he said yes. According to him, what happened immediately thereafter was cable was not working right, and there was disturbances. I'm wondering if there is a download of information or a transference of information taking place at a higher level of intelligence than we know about, or technology.
So, is it the craft that's downloading information to someone on Earth, or is it the craft that's receiving a download?
I'm thinking it's downloading into a... this is highly, highly speculative, but I sure enjoy the heck out of entertaining this thought. It could be purely a matter of disturbance, but there seems to be patterns to it. And wouldn't that be a very interesting way to go about downloading a massive amount of information, be it subliminal or whatever, is to directly download it into a series of communications such as television or, say, for instance, now we're talking, it's over my digital phone system through my cable company. So this is highly speculative, but I have to entertain that as something, too.
Okay, now this heads me in two directions at the same time, so I'll saddle up and ride off in all directions. All right, the first question with regard to that, as we're talking about this sort of thunderous sound and the ground shaking and the house shaking, reminds me of a scene in the movie Independence Day. As the craft are arriving over the cities, that was happening. And you may remember the scene. Will Smith is asleep, and he wakes up and rolls over and says to his girlfriend, "What is that, an earthquake?" And she says, "It's not any more than a 4.0. Go back to sleep." Now,
yes.
Okay, here, that scene, pardon me, leads me to email that I've gotten and calls that I've gotten about the fact that Independence Day is being shown over and over and over, almost nonstop, on some of the cable channels. And people have written to me and asked me, and people have called into this show and asked me, do you think they're trying to program our minds for some upcoming event? Because they're doing this over and over and over. So what do you think?
Yes. I always say, pay attention to Hollywood, because they are the pulse of fiction. Is how reality is portrayed to us these days. It's how we can handle doses of reality. Let's say, for instance, these catastrophic shows all of a sudden showed up in and about before all these new announcements as far as killer asteroids and everything else. This invasion scenario is sort of interesting, too. One that I'd also like to point out is, the other Alien movie, the remake.
War of the Worlds.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Now, when you see the bellowing of the clouds and these crafts are in them, and you hear this tone, this deep tone, remember in the Bible, them speaking about the sounding of trumpets and all this blaring and sounds. The first thing I heard, the first thing that it struck me when I was a part of that investigation in January of 2005 were those words in the Bible. Okay, and it hit me hard, because the sounding of trumpets. You wouldn't relate to this to any other way than thunder and trumpets. You didn't have jets back then. So this could also be associated with these types of craft. But I think there's more involved with the sound than just noise and rumbling. I think it's ultrasonic frequencies that are part of some sort of mechanized something. I don't know. But they sure play havoc with technology.
Okay, now, but why are, I believe you said, yes, we are being programmed. Why?
Mm-hmm. You mean as far as television programming?
Yeah, with this incessant replay of Independence Day, which, by the way, I like the movie. But I watched it 3 times in one night last week.
I liked it, you know. I'm not one for too much sci-fi, strangely mm-hmm. enough. But I find it interesting. What I like about Independence Day, and I absolutely loved about, War of the Worlds, is these little segments of what we can, of what we know to be, let's say, truths or facts here and there. And I'm like, wow, that's pretty interesting that they threw that in there, you know. But I think that's a way to condition people to a greater truth on a much larger scale. I mean, we have a scenario, like I say, are we as a people able to handle collectively the fact that we are not alone, that we have been engaged for many years, and that something a little more grandiose is on the horizon. And then one way to do it is to put people in a state of fear only to have that retract and say, it wasn't that bad. You know, it's like going to the doctor, you know.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, probably to increase that fear factor only to have it retract to whatever it actually comes out to be is probably a very safe way to work with the psyche on a grand scale.
All right, I have less than a minute before break. Let me ask you this. Who is behind the decision to program us?
Good question. I would say the very same people that have been kept us at bay and realize that this pony is going to break loose, like it or not.
Okay.
What alternative?
Fair enough. We're about 15 seconds or so away from break, and when we come back from break, I want to talk about the pony breaking loose, and because you're part of that, you're part of the process of the pony escaping. So we'll bring that up when we come back. All right, folks, more with Sam Maranto right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Sam Maranto, and he is the president of Illinois MUFON. Sam, when we stepped away, I kind of put you on the spot. I usually say it this way. I say the public has outrun the spin, and people aren't buying the spin anymore on UFOs. And it's becoming, the evidence has just long ago reached critical mass, reached the tipping point, and people are not buying the spin. Now, you use the phrase, this pony is going to break free. Now, you're part of that by doing the UFO investigations that you do. I mean that very much in a positive way. You are part of the pony breaking free. So what's your assessment on this? Have we reached a point of critical mass where the public isn't going to be buying the spin anymore?
I think you hit it on the head. What happens is there is a when you get enough people to grow a spine, really to get their backbone in place, and realize what's going on in this world, in this country, you get fed up. Well, you get fed up at different levels and on different topics. And this is as good a topic as any to start getting people united to say, okay, let's work on this. Because odds are, once this opens, once the pony's loose, there's going to be a stampede. And I think that's where the fear factor on their end, whoever they may be, may come into play. I think if they realize they can't let it go, but to let out little bits at a time, it may very well suffice, especially when we have so many dramatic subjects and concerns and terrible, terrible distrust in government, of all things, right?
Yeah.
This is a very trying time. But it's a perfect time, a great opportunity to give a taste or a slight antidote to that paranoia, distrust, and actually gain some ground and confidence in the American public, if not the world. I think this is a prime opportunity for them to at least start with something as dramatic as this. And it would take, I personally feel it would take a lot of people's minds off of some shortcomings, such as their personal concerns, when they say things on a much grander scale, that, wow, we aren't alone. Well, I better start looking at things a little bit differently.
You know, you were talking about how this gets let out in fiction, and it gets let out in movies and even in music. I don't get to watch television until really late at night. I work on things related to the show till after midnight. And so it's usually 1-2 o'clock in the morning before I get to watch any television. And naturally, being the sort of soul that I am, I usually will watch Sci-Fi Channel. So I was watching Star Trek last night, and this particular episode, it struck me last night. I had never seen this episode, and this is that, I forget which the Star Treks, I forget the name, it's the one with Jean-Luc Picard, and there was a ship that was abandoned but was alive. Now, this ship was a life form, and the Enterprise was tracking it, trying to find out what was going on, trying to rescue this ship out of the area because the planet or the star that it was around was about to go supernova. Now, that living ship, as portrayed on Star Trek, was the shape of a piece of material, and you probably will know the guy's name. It's been a long time. I've had him on the show. This guy has a piece of what he says is off of a UFO. It's sort of a cone-shaped, metallic-looking piece of material.
Bob White, I think, is the name.
That's it. This ship on Star Trek looked like that piece of material. And they were calling this ship Tin Man. And it struck me last night, someone of the writers must have information about that piece of material that Bob White has. They must have seen a picture. They must have heard an interview. They must have some information. So where do these, like X-Files and Star Wars and Independence Day and Star Trek, where are they getting the information that appears to be inside information? Where are they getting that from?
They delve into actual investigative reports, interviews, etc. And the funny thing is, you talk about this, the Bob White object, I refer to it as slagging. Mm-hmm. On the case I've worked on in 2004 for a couple of years up in Wisconsin, there's footage of an object with what appears to be this type of slaggy in and about it, the sides of it. And
was it dripping off of it?
No, it's actually a part of it. It's mm-hmm. not there. This stuff isn't doesn't appear to be. There seems to be no reason or rhyme for the stuff to be smooth or to have a form or anything for aerodynamics.
Mm-hmm.
There's obviously, you know, form follows function. They must have adopted that that methodology as far as the construction of this stuff or the manner it's manufactured or extruded. This may be an extruded type of material. Where the craft or object or mechanism is actually extruded, and therefore it appears that way. I don't know if it enhances its function or not, but it may. But nonetheless, there's this footage, and I've been able to isolate some of the individual frames, and this thing appears to have similar objects on it, or how would you call it, slagging. Is what I refer to it.
Yeah, it almost looks like a metallic icicle.
Yes. Isn't mm-hmm. it strange?
Yeah.
And it has such unusual properties that, you know, everybody says, well, it's this or that. No, this thing's genuinely odd. And it has properties to it that you don't find with a chunk of aluminum or whatever these people, you know, so many people conjure up. It's not that. It's a genuine article. Now, again, you were saying, where does science fiction get this? They get it from reality in more instances than not. The X-Files, I know Daryl Sims had some major tie-in with the X-Files. He mentions that time and time again, where at least the first few episodes were actually based on some of his research, and, of course, much of it was based on Roswell and a few other people's research. And again, you see in fiction so much reality, but it's a way to present it in a manner that the public can sit and actually listen to. Music's another thing. You know, I hate to use the pun, struck a chord, but you did strike a chord there because I use music and art and everything else in much of my presentations because mm-hmm. that's something people can relate to. It lets down defenses, and there's a commonality. The only way to communicate is to literally strike that chord. And whether it's fiction, whether it's a movie, whether it's music, or sitting around a campfire, you know.
Well, using music is so important. If people will just think about this, it's so powerful. Take all the music out of a movie, and about 50% of the movie's punch is gone. It's just incredible. And, you know, one of my degrees is in education, and one of the things that has been long known is if you want to teach people something, piggyback that with sight and sound. Piggyback the message on sound. Give them something to look at, but give them something to hear as they look at it. And they will retain 20 to 30% more if you do that. All right, we have to take a break. When we come back, we will open up the telephone lines and allow you to call in with your question or comment for Sam Maranto. And we'll be back right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Sam Maranto. He is the president of Illinois MUFON. Sam, we're going to open the phone lines here in just a moment. As a matter of fact, folks, let me give you the telephone number. The telephone number is 602-539-9580, 602-539-9580. But if you live outside of Canada or you live outside of the USA, you may not want to make that international long-distance call. It will work. You know, if you can call us from anywhere in the world on that number. But if you don't want to make the international long-distance call, go to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, scroll down, and you'll see a link that says Flash Message. Now, if you're in Canada or the USA, use the phone number. If you're outside of that, then you can send me a flash message, okay? All right. Now, let's go to the telephone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yes, it's Kevin from North Bay, Ontario.
Kevin, let me warn you that the software that controls our phones is not working right. And so you may hear some beeps. I can't turn okay. those off. But go ahead with your question or comment.
Oh, yes, Sam and Kevin. I've been hearing through the grapevine that France may be coming out with, is going to come out and say that we are not alone, that a lot of these UFOs that we've been seeing, first of all, that they're real and that they are extraterrestrial in origin. Have you been hearing anything about that?
Yes.
Do you have any information you can share with us about that?
Nothing as of yet. Nothing solid. But I have a funny feeling that the world will know quicker than me. if it doesn't happen, where I get my hands on some information beforehand and privy to bring it forward, I will call Kevin and announce it.
Great. I think I'm going to do, especially if France does decide not to announce something, I'm going to look into the France section of my Timothy Good books. I think they might shed some light on when some of the alien contact that perhaps we've had over the years. And do you think that this also may also tie into the 2012 thing?
Well, we are in some sort of event horizon. There's no doubt about it. Now, things, when we say an event horizon, it doesn't have to be something immediate. It could be incremental, like the turning up of events. And we can definitely see that with strange Earth phenomena, the weather patterns, of course, the economic strife, war, all sorts of things. We can also look into the heavens, what's going on as far as the heating up of planets. We are at a solar low, a very unusual solar low. So, things are going on. What about, you know, as far as a time? Is it 2012? I don't know. It may be sooner. It may be longer. We are involved in, we are actually in this pattern of something. So it's not going to be all at once. We are in it already, whatever it is.
All right, thank you.
All right, thanks for the call. And let me say again to everyone, I apologize. The phone system, I normally can mute those beeps. It's not allowing me to do that, and we will have to live with that, I guess, through the rest of the show. I don't know why, but it is a reality for tonight. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling? It might help, caller, hang on. It might help if the pilot knew how to fly the plane. All right, your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, this is Bob from California.
Hi, Bob.
Hi, I had a question for Sam.
Okay.
I know you're the Illinois MUFON president, but I'm in California, and I've recently seen a UFO sighting a couple weeks ago. And I've noticed that there's a lot of reports between San Diego and Monterey off of the coast, ocean area, also known as USOs, of course. And I remember reading a lot of books about different things people have written in the past showing that there's a lot of activity around Laguna Canyon. That makes a T, and the UFO that I saw went from the beach across Laguna Canyon past the hills. So I'm noticing a lot of activity in that T-shaped up and down the coast. Have you heard anything in those particular areas in the U.S.? Thank you.
Well, yes, that is another hot spot. And, of course, our expert out there in California, Ruben Uriarte, could be contacted to get further information from the MUFON site, and he could tell you more information. I recall a case that I heard about, an incident, and it was in that area. One of these days, I'd love to be back on the show and talk about it. It would take a good 15, 20 minutes, and I don't think we have that time.
Actually, you know, we've got an hour, so we can talk about whatever you wish to talk about. But let's see. I'm getting flash messages in. Here's one that says, okay, a couple of them that are not related to the show. Here's one from South Africa. All right, let me just read it. I'm not sure if it's related to what we're talking about. I've just checked out a thread on the AT's site where they talk about this guy from the 17th century, Emanuel Swedenborg, who had ET abduction experience and then drew a sketch of the craft as well. And then he gives me a link. And, that sort of goes along with what we're talking about. These things go way back in history. UFOs, this is not a new phenomena. This has been happening for centuries that we know about. And you mentioned earlier a description in the Bible, Sam, of, you know, sort of a boiling cloud and thunder and trumpets. And look, there are at least two, and probably more, but at least two very clear descriptions of what we would call a UFO, very clear descriptions of them, contained within the pages of what people call the Bible.
Absolutely. And other texts, other religious texts, texts that are considered sacred, forbidden knowledge, etc. There are historical accounts of sightings that go way back. So the whole notion, the whole mythology, that ufology is something that just happened in and about 1947 with Kenneth Arnold, is malarkey. There's no relevance to that whatsoever. Yet that is the era we considered the modern age of ufology. For people in ufology, it's broken up into like elements of research or segments of research. So that would be, from a historical perspective, considered 47 and up would be the modern age of ufology. And by the way, just an added note, Peter Richard Dolan will be done with his book and having that out relatively soon, the second part of UFOs in a National Security State. And I believe that's going to bring it up to the 90s, historical perspective. And it's great reference. It's an excellent read and a magnificent author and speaker.
All right, folks, the telephone number is 602-539-9580 if you have a question or comment, or you can use the flash message feature on my website if you're outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada. Here's a flash message from Nigel in the United Kingdom, and he says, can I ask your guest, has there been any reports lately of a UFO are of UFOs that are shaped like a ring, and I mean a metal object?
Yes, the donut shape with a ring. There have been accounts of those. There's actually been photographs of some, whether they're genuine or not. You know, they have been touted as being genuine. I've heard of ring-shaped UFOs. So, yes. Currently, I actually think there was one recently. But it wasn't real recent. It wasn't, like, say, within the last 4 months.
Mm-hmm. See, that's one that I had not heard of. I mean, I've heard of all kinds of shapes. I actually had, a long time ago, somewhere, somebody mentioned something shaped kind of like a shoe. And then you mentioned that tonight. But I had not heard of these ring-shaped UFOs. Do they display any strange characteristics other than their shape?
The one in particular that I heard, there was also an object in the middle, but they seemed to have been displaced from the other, and it looked like Saturn. Though I heard of another account of just a ring. So I think they come in variations. You know, it's we can't put our finger on saying, oh, it's one type, much again like the disc or the flying saucer versus some massive behemoth floating in the sky that makes no sense, you know, like a flying city, for instance,
mm-hmm.
But shaped like a V. And there are squares, large squares. They're octagonal. There's so many shapes. The other thing is, it isn't necessarily true that you're seeing all the components of what's there either. Some of this may be cloaked. Some of it may just not resonate in our light frequency, so that you wouldn't be able to, you know, discern it. So we don't know what the true shape of this stuff is. I mean, if you were to look through, let's say, night vision glasses, and you might be able to, you know, a third generation, you might be able to pick something else up. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if we're seeing all the components of these larger craft or some of these unusual ones.
Well, speaking of, you know, a shape that's not typical, we had a guest here on this show who was a witness to a UFO event or incident, and she and I believe it was her brother and some friends were at a lake. And it was nighttime, and all of a sudden it got very, very still. And she said it was just as if the air was absolutely crystal clear. And then there was this low rumble, and from behind them, they were, I think, on a pier at the lake, but from behind them, it flew over them, coming from behind them, and it was a gigantic pyramid. Now, have you had reports of pyramids?
Yes.
How frequently do you get those?
Oh, boy. I would say those are the odd 1%ers or 2%ers, 1%. You get cross-shaped. I mean, almost every imaginable shape. Some appearing to be, you know, alive. You know, that was the other thing when you were talking about the biological UFO or object or spaceship in that they were talking about or that was trying to be saved in Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
Some of these things appear to be biological. Now, we think of that, well, if it's alive, then it cannot be a piece of technology. No, actually, if it's biological, it's the ultimate technology. Again, what are we? In the material sense, we are vessels for a higher consciousness that's embodied in us, be it a spirit or a conscious or whatever. But it's a vessel.
Uh-huh.
It is a piece of technology. And it's hard for us to separate the biological from the technical because it has to be hard material, and that's not the case whatsoever. And the greater or the higher research or the deeper research as far as weaponry and cloaking is to be more stealth-like in a natural environment, more like a living organism.
You know, it's pretty difficult for us to imagine a machine that's alive. But I've had on this show remote viewers, names that I know you're familiar with, Ed Dames, Paul Smith, and some others, who said that when they took a look at Mars and when they took a look at the moon, that they did see living machines. And it's difficult for me to put my mind around that, but, you know, living machine. And some of the descriptions, one of the descriptions you used here tonight of a craft flying over someone and the skin of the thing looked like it was undulating. Some of these appear to be living things. And right here in Arizona, just south of Phoenix, we have the Australia Mountains. And there has been taken video of things in the sky that look like big plasma balls of energy, but they move, they morph, they change shapes, change configurations, and appear to be living. How are we supposed to think about these things? Are these UFOs or are they UEOs, unidentified energy objects?
Now, that is a very good point. When we think of UFOs, many a time we think of a solid object. There's plasmas. There's just orbs of light. There are distortions, optical distortions, that may be cloaking or it may very well be some sort of intradimensional disturbance, but something's there, and obviously in the form of a talent, of an intelligence. The other thing is there are apparently sky creatures, things that live in and about the skies. So, yes, and are these all fall in the category of UFOs? Well, they come into the category of something, you know, that falls, you know, that we come across now and then. And the other thing is, when I'm thinking of your area, I've seen footage of something that appeared to be a large combination of a crab type thing and an octopus. What on earth it was, I don't know, but it was there on film. And knowing the individual who was shooting it, there's, you know, it's solid. This guy isn't goofing around. So what is this stuff? I don't know. I think the dimensional aspect to this is where much of it lies. The research being done by Ted Phillips down in Marley Woods currently, some of the research that was done at Skinwalker, and some of the things that we're going to be getting into hopefully in the next few months up in Wisconsin at one location, I think is going to give us some clues about this intradimensional component and maybe some of the other things that may be poking in and out in this world as we know it, coming from another world that we have no clue about.
One of the really weird things, as you were talking about this, one of the really weird things out here is that many of these strange shapes that people see in the skies and that they videotape from right here in this area, those same shapes are etched into ancient petroglyphs in places like South Mountain, Australia Mountains, etc., around Phoenix. I've seen them. And in fact, the whole Phoenix Lights thing, there is a petroglyph that shows that shape, that configuration, out on South Mountain, and it's at least hundreds, maybe a couple of thousand years old.
Yes, and the funny thing about much of those petroglyphs, many of them were destroyed back in the 30s. I don't know who ordered them, but they were pretty much erased or destroyed. And there is this notion, or let's say, story that goes along with them, that if you were to look at some of those, it would have automatically transcend you into another world. And these things may very well function at the subconscious level, functioning as keys to a vault of higher knowledge. And that's a possibility. And some of those petroglyphs, by the way, are in excess of 13,000 years old. Very interesting stuff.
I went out on South Mountain. I've been out there several times. I've been out there with Jeff Woolline, who's done a lot of research into these petroglyphs. I've been out there with Walter Bosley, who is a publisher and former OSI special agent. And, you know, we found petroglyphs that you can't see from the ground. As you climb a cliff, you reach a point where maybe there's a ledge and there are petroglyphs there. And you wonder why. I mean, why did they put petroglyphs there? You can't see them from above. You can't see them from below. But the marking, according to Woolline, the marking that we looked at, we saw two of them, indicates a portal of some kind. And coming out of these portals in the petroglyphs are these creatures that look like they're part human, part lizard.
Right.
And
out of the earth. Yeah,
yeah.
Dimensional aspect from the ground. Jeff does great work. There's actually some very good, very, very good researchers out there, and I'm only about 5 years behind getting my butt out there to do some research with some of them, and I expect to be out there in February this year to do some work, and really looking forward to it, because I think what's going to happen, too, is when you get enough of these people together collectively in some of these areas, I think some of this phenomena may manifest itself for us. And that's what I'm hoping for, as long as it doesn't eat me.
Well, Jeff started out thinking it was all machines, these UFOs. And as he started getting into these petroglyphs and studying that and seeing those same shapes in the skies, he's changed his opinion to most of this stuff out here around Phoenix are living entities. All right, we'll be back right after this break, and we have a flash message out of Japan that we'll go to. We'll be back, folks. Don't go away. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show and my guest, Sam Maranto. Sam, let's read this flash message from Japan. This is from Stuart, and he says the sci-fi series a few years ago called Farscape also featured a living ship. You know, I can't remember Farscape. Now, there's every possibility that Farscape, I get emails where people talk about it, but every possibility it was on the air when I was out of the country. So I don't remember that. Do you remember Farscape?
Not at all. I'm was that from the 80s?
I really don't know. But I was out of the country for a number of years, so.
Right.
You know. A lot happened while I was out of the country. I got to tell you, I came back. My first thought was, what in the heck has been going on here? People are asleep at the switch. Okay, let's go to the telephone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, Kevin. This is Stefan from Quebec. How are you?
I'm doing well, Stefan.
That's great. Just a quick comment regarding the UFOs being alive. I always wondered, you know, like if you look at our modern cars, we're outfitting them now with GPS devices, and I don't see it as being impossible. It's too far in the future. We'll actually inject AI into vehicles themselves until eventually maybe they'll become their own living entities. So if you project that into the future, who knows, you know, we...
Well, let me tell you something. When I was in junior high school, we had a room they called the film room, and they used to take us, especially science classes, they would take us in there and show us films. And I can't remember what year, but 7th, 8th, or 9th grade, they took us into the film room, and they showed us a film where there were scientists who were working in a laboratory. I believe, and I cannot swear that this is the case, but I believe it was Bell Laboratories. And they were working on trying to merge brain cells with computers. And they showed these vats with liquid in it, and they had these brain cells in there, and they were trying to merge them with computer operations. And that would have been in the late 60s.
Wow.
So it would seem to me if they were working on that then, they probably have some sort of living machinery available right now.
Very possible. I don't find it unlikely at all, actually.
Yeah. Have you heard anything about that, Sam?
Well, one thing that I've heard about, and again, it's only speculative and rumor, and that being a monster computer type thing called Nemesis.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if it's genuine or not. It's all speculative. I don't know. But I think the research using living things, also the properties of crystals and waters are overlooked quite a bit in the in conversation. Let's just say there's a lot of research in those two properties of water and crystals.
Okay. Stefan, did you have another question or comment?
Well, I was just thinking about the cars ourselves. Like, if you look at cars, I mean, they're just basically extensions, mechanical extensions of animals themselves. I mean, like a car is just basically like an iron horse with four legs and exhaust, you know, pretty much everything that a regular animal has, but in mechanical form. So if you just project that into the future, who knows what our future vehicles will look like? They probably will be AI.
Could be.
Alive themselves.
Could be. All right. Yeah. Thanks for the call.
Yep. Thank you.
All right. The telephone number, ladies and gentlemen, is 602-539-9580. If you have a question or a comment, that's the number to call. From Australia, John writes, some years ago I read a centuries-old book written by Comte de Kabbalah, which was about entities that lived in the atmosphere. And the book is called Spirits of the Air. It goes into some detail about many of these creatures. It was also written in a manner that few could relate to, a special way that only those whose minds were such that they could correlate all the information in their minds would understand. He says, I suppose in those times one had to take care in dealing with such subjects of mystery that this was. They did have to be careful, and you still have to, right, Sam?
Absolutely. As we know.
Yes. You know, sometimes someone will say something on this show, or I will ask a question on this show. I have absolutely no idea that it's anything really sensitive, but all of a sudden, right at that moment, the telephones will go wacky, or the guest gets cut off the line, or they'll cut it. Our video feed suddenly goes away. Our audio feed goes away. Can I prove that there is intelligence behind that? No, I can't prove it, but I can tell you, it's pretty damned odd that it happens right at the moment when something pretty interesting is about to be said or has just been said. You do have to be careful in how you say things, and but even so, there is a great deal of very open conversation about UFOs. People that you formerly, in years gone by, you wouldn't expect they would be interested or openly talking about them, and yet here they are now, like astronaut Dr. Edgar Mitchell.
More so now than ever, I think, people are starting to relax some of this, and even, like you say, of Mitchell, a few other people, even rubbing elbows with certain individuals and aspects of military intelligence, etc., they will talk a little bit, but then there's that point where they will walk away, and you just know, you have to know where that comes in so it doesn't get so awkward.
Sam, when you and I were talking on the telephone, you mentioned a sighting where someone saw a blue UFO.
Yes.
A blue object. Are you able to talk about that?
Yeah, I can actually talk about that. It was the grandfather of this gentleman who had this. It was part of these last three sightings up in Minnesota, and he alluded to his grandfather talking about this. The gentleman was a salesman some years back, and it was off of 94 in Wisconsin where they were driving along, and I guess there was a good amount of traffic, and this massive blue object rising up over the trees, comes over the cars. The cars pull over the side. All the cars stop running. Every car stopped running. It seemed to have hovered for some period of time, obviously. Took off, and as it took off, all the cars start by themselves. Now, I couldn't count the amount of times I've actually heard stories like that. And I recall, again, up in Wisconsin, tied in with this case that I've been working on since 2004, a gentleman's truck, the UFO hovered over, car stopped, he goes out, hears this object overhead, he runs into a field trying to run away from it, it takes off. The minute it takes off, he gets there, he's ready to put the keys into the truck, and it starts by itself. Pretty interesting, but you were talking about the blue object of Tunguska.
Yeah, that's what really interested me whenever you mentioned this blue object, because the eyewitnesses to Tunguska saw a brilliant blue, and I don't mean the color was brilliant, I mean the light that it was giving off was brilliant, and it was blue, and it was so bright it was hard to look at, and they said that it was kind of shaped like a pipe, or we would say cylindrical. It was in the air for about 10 minutes. It took about 10 minutes for it to descend, so it was not streaking down towards the surface of the Earth like a meteor or an asteroid, and that's the explanation that a lot of people try to ascribe to Tunguska, is that it was a meteor or asteroid. The blast pattern at Tunguska indicates that it would have had to have been either a cylinder or an elongated oval-shaped something. And it did not, there was no impact explosion, according to the witnesses. It was on the ground, and then they began to hear what sounded like thunder or artillery. There were as many as 10 of these events, and then there was a flash of blue light, a column of blue light that went from the ground up, didn't come from the heavens down, and that light was seen as far away as India.
Well, we've actually had columns of light being seen, but thank God no events afterwards. And they've seen this as far as India, just the column of light.
Yeah, yeah. And the seismic event was measured all over the world when there was this huge explosion. And the air pressure was, change in the atmospheric pressure was measured as far away as Britain. And then for three nights after that, the skies all over Europe were illuminated. They were bright, bright enough that in London, they said you could read a newspaper without the streetlights. So a very strange event, but it was a blue object that people saw.
Well, I'm happy that thing didn't blow up over in Wisconsin. So much for my fishing trip, huh?
Yeah, well, you know, you could have one of those over here in Arizona, and a lot of places here in Arizona, you know, it'd just be absolute desert. It wouldn't bother anything. But, did you know that only 19% of Arizona is privately held land?
I didn't know that.
Only 19% of this entire state is in private hands. The rest of it is federal government or American Indian reservations. And so Arizona is largely unpopulated. Huh. Now, this blue UFO that your witness told you about... I understand he's getting this from his grandfather,
yes.
But how well, I'll have to ask it when we come back. I want to know what shape it was. We got to take a break. We'll step away for just a few minutes, and we'll be back in just a moment, folks, with Sam Maranto. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show and to my guest, Sam Maranto. Sam, what about this this blue UFO? What shape was it?
I believe what he said was a oval, elongated oval.
So if you looked at it from a certain perspective, from the side, it could look like... just a cylinder.
Right. It could look like a cylinder, depending on your perspective.
Mm-hmm. Did he say how large it was?
No. Again, what happened was we weren't able to get into that conversation long enough. I was interrupted by another phone call. And what he alluded to makes me feel the object was pretty big, because people were just shocked by it, and size must have very well been one of the things that, you know, one of the characteristics that rolled them over as it lifted up from behind these trees. And this isn't really uncommon. I've heard many stories like that up here, where something rises over the trees, either from a farm field. And, in fact, the gentleman was talking about his own event where something was flashing him from a farm field. And it was relatively similar to an event we had
in October up here, and this again was a ovalish type object, but he said that one was more metallic than what his grandfather saw. But then again, it may not have been in a state of flux, you know, where it's really super energized or something.
Mm-hmm.
And again, as people say, well, why do UFOs need lights? Again, it's a displacement of energy. It's not lights per se for illuminating, but the result of energy. This is the big misinterpretation, you know, because a lot of so-called skeptics use that, well, you know, as one of their reasonings that these can't be extraterrestrial. Why do they need lights, you know?
There's a video out of Chile. You may have seen it. You may be aware of it. Maybe not. That shows a UFO shooting a beam of light to the ground, and it's like quick as lightning. It's just...
Yes.
Have you seen this?
Yes, I've actually heard of accounts, and I... the Tinley Park Triangle actually shot a... must have shot a laser of some sort. We have a picture of that.
Mm-hmm.
So these things emit lights to the ground, various types of light. Some of these may even be tractor beams to lift stuff up, and you know, such as cattle or, you know, elk, whatever. But we have recordings, we have photographs, not many. But not all these accounts are a matter of CGI, you know, some computer imagery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And fraud. So.
All right. Now, we're on final approach here, meaning that we only have a few minutes left. I want to get into this whole matter of disclosure for just a moment. A lot of people are really, really, and have been for a long time, pushing for disclosure from the government about UFOs. And there's a big push on with the Paradigm Research group. They did the million faxes on Washington, and now they're in phase three of that. And they're really pushing to get disclosure about UFOs out of the current administration. What do you think personally? What do you think about disclosure? Is it going to happen? And if it's going to happen, how long do you think it will be before it happens?
First of all, I applaud Steve Bassett, a friend and friend to all of us, and does great work. Dr. Stephen Greer, all of them. I personally feel we are going to move disclosure. It will not be initiated. We have to first show that we're ready for it and that there is a groundswell and we're demanding it. And I think this administration has an opportunity to at least let the pony stick his head out, maybe,
mm-hmm.
and start some of this slowly. And it may also be a way to detract and buy time on formulating some better plans and taking, you know, sounder steps at resolving what is definitely a severe recession. If nothing more than that, I don't know. I think it may be more than that. But this is a good time for them to do something like disclosure, or at least portions of it. Start now.
Now what about a timeline? How long do you think it will be before we start to see that happen?
It could happen within the next 18 months if they're serious about it. I think there are people in Washington that are serious about it, and I think their hand's going to be forced. I think we're going to start seeing greater, larger numbers of UFOs over cities.
Why?
I think it's just we are at an event horizon. I could just feel that. Of course, it's pure speculation, but it's what I feel.
Mm-hmm.
And
I'm not asking anybody to take it to the bank, I ever say. I never ask anybody to believe me. That's my own personal feeling. And I think we are in an event horizon. In fact, I'm certain of it. Are these UFOs going to be a part of that? I think they are. I don't know. I don't know for certainty, absolute certainty, but I think they are. Again, I like to weigh my words.
Sure. Okay, what about then, talking about an event horizon, what about Planet X, or as some people refer to it, Nibiru? Is this a reality? Is it on its way in?
I think it is. It's something that I've only followed for I don't know how many years, a real long time, and I think it is an actual object out there. I don't know if that's the cause effect that's going on, but I think it's a genuine object, and it's talked about enough in historical accounts. And I am not an expert on it, but again, I've had some fearful dreams that make me think that, yeah, this is a reality and something may happen. I don't know, but I know we're in an event. We are in, I personally feel and know we are in a time period that I can only refer to as an event horizon.
Well, you certainly are not alone, as you well know, and across this audience around the world, there are many, many people who would say the same thing, that they sense that we are in an event horizon, and we're right on the brink of it. We're just about out of time. I want to thank you for being with us this evening. It's been marvelous, and good to have you back.
Thank you so much, and if I hear any breaking news, I will call you immediately.
I appreciate it. If you will, just stay on the line with me for a moment as we conclude the show. There you go, folks. Sam Maranto, president of Illinois MUFON. You need to go over to the website, illinoismufon.com, and take a look. Lots of good information there. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.